Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading some more information from the book Piglet, The Unexpected Story of a Deaf, Blind, Pink Puppy and His Family by veterinarian Melissa Shapiro. And if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to begin Piglet by Melissa Shapiro. And in the last chapter, we learned that Melissa and her husband had met in a very unusual circumstance. Today, we're going to start with Chapter 5 called Foster Puppy, March, April 2017. The importance of creating family routines for life can't be overstated, whether it's for your dogs, your birds, your kids, or you. On day 3 of Piglet's stay with us, with a plan of action in mind and some guidance from colleagues who had expertise in training deaf and blind dogs, I sent a text to Dr. Gloria Andrews that I'd begun the process of helping them search for the right adoptive placement for Piglet by posting my first photos and videos of him to my own Facebook page. A friend, Ann Jordan, who is the founder and director of Connecticut Dachshund Rescue and a no-anesthesia dental hygienist for pets, called me and suggested, "You might want to contact Corinne Zoskak at Sophia's Grace Foundation. I'm sure she'd help spread the word," and went on to say that this was a well-run dachshund rescue group with a wide reach in Pennsylvania and surrounding states. When I followed up with Corinne, she kindly posted Piglet Bartlett's story and photos on her page. Over the next hours, I was astonished to see that one post drawing hundreds of other responses. There were risks associated with putting the word out far and wide, still, and that was how we were going to find the right home for Piglet. Without question, I had faith that all care would be taken to make sure our foster boy would be placed in the best possible setting where he would be safe and understood. This same thoughtful effort led to placements of Piglet's 3 littermates. A few weeks in, instead of continuing to post on my personal Facebook page, at the request of friends who wanted to have a reliable place to come view pics and videos of my foster boy, I created a new page devoted just to him, which I called Piglet, the Deaf, Blind, Pink Puppy. Soon, I sent notes to other rescue groups asking them to post my posts with a focus of finding Piglet's forever home. Gloria and her sister started to field all kinds of queries and then applications. The thought of sending him off in the same condition in which he'd arrived was worrisome. Placing him too soon would give him the feeling of being tossed around like a hot potato. That's why one of the main goals of fostering was to get him settled into a routine that he could integrate into his new life once adopted. After nights 1 and 2 of his stay with us, I knew that the first order of business was creating a reliable bedtime routine that he could take with him to his forever family home, and at the same time allow him and me to get a decent night's sleep and be functional the next day. After those exhausting nights of trying to fall asleep while sitting up on the couch holding Piglet, I reconsidered my well-kept rule that puppies should sleep in their crates. The rule exists for a couple of reasons, mainly to avoid having baby dogs pee and poop in the bed. Crate training works because puppies are less likely to soil a small area where they sleep, especially useful at night. There is a safety factor to be considered, too. Because when you're asleep, you can't watch them to make sure they don't chew on electrical cords or get into any number of other dangerous situations. A protective crate covered by a blanket, except for the opening, can be cozy and den-like, a comforting place of refuge for young dogs and even older ones. We were usually strict about crating dogs, but of course every rule has an exception. For me, the first time I broke my own rule was when we brought Zoe home. There's no amount of rationalizing or explaining the craziness on our part that led to our bringing home a 6th dog, but one with a bit of history should be mentioned. Some months earlier, we had successfully fostered Daisy, a darling little chihuahua, whom we continued to regret sending off when our foster term was over. Though we were in no hurry, this was when Warren and I had both seen a listing for 6 tiny Chihuahua mixes in Arkansas, and we were both sorely tempted, though separately, because we wouldn't admit to each other that we would even consider adding a 6th dog. This litter of puppies had been born in a home in Arkansas where people didn't regularly spay and neuter their dogs. Some of these settings have revealed attempts at being backyard home breeders, that is, small-scale unqualified breeders with commercial intent, who also experiment with mixing breeds to see how cute the litters turn out. This is somewhat different from the hoarding situation that is accidentally producing crossbred dogs who may be genetically prone to birth defects and severe disability. Neither is good. The Arkansas home may not have been such a so-called backyard breeding operation, but we did know that the puppies in the listing had been born from the mating of a Chihuahua dad and a Yorkie Maltese mom. When I heard the name given to the mom's breed mix, Morkie, my stomach churned. The notion of a designer breed is a relatively new method of exploiting dogs. There's a market for the adorable, usual fluffy mixes, but while there are some designer dog breeders that do appropriate health testing on their breeding stock, there are large numbers of irresponsible backyard breeders and puppy mills who commonly have no concern for medical history or ongoing veterinary care. They maintain beautiful websites with pictures of adorable puppies, and some sell directly to pet stores. They come across as reputable and caring, but in fact, they should be avoided. When the Arkansas puppies were all of 5 weeks old, the people who had chose them to give them away for free on Craigslist, a group in the area, Allie's Hope Animal Rescue, saw the listing and contacted the people. They were able to pick up the puppies and get the adult dogs spayed and neutered, a standard requirement of most rescue groups that take in dogs from backyard in-home breeders, as well as hoarding situations. We first heard about the puppies and saw the pictures of them through my wonderful rescue friend, Holly Chasen, whose Connecticut-based dog rescue organization is the Little Pink Shelter. Holly works with a number of rescuers in Arkansas to bring adoptable dogs to the forever homes in Connecticut. We actually met as fellow moms when our sons attended the same nursery school. Soon afterward, Holly's dogs and cats became my patients, and I started to learn more and more about her rescue work. Exemplary in many ways, Holly's approach is to take extra time and effort to describe her adorable dogs as accurately and reliably as possible. Holly did so by patterning with reliable rescuers in Arkansas who took great care of their rescued dogs and were helpful in providing those very accurate descriptions of what dogs were like so that Holly could then give them reliable write-ups for their online adoption pages. Warren and I, separately smitten by the photos Holly posted, were enchanted by her thoughtful description. It all came out in a confession to each other one night. Warren admitted with a sigh, "I love the tan puppy. That's the one we have to have." "Oh, that baby's so cute. But have you seen the solid brown one? I was in love with that tiny piece of chocolate." Now we had a problem that might be the solution to our dog addiction. We could have argued and just decided against adopting a 6th dog. Instead, when I spoke to the woman who was fostering the puppies in Arkansas and learned that Noelle, soon to become Zoe, was the most people-oriented and the most affectionate lap dog, I was given my get-out-of-jail-free card, the fact that I didn't have a lap dog and really, really had always wanted one. We had to figure out how to get her up to Westport ASAP. I was worried that the longer she stayed in the South with other dogs, the more likely it was that she would get sick. Noli, Zoe, was very young and very tiny and not yet fully vaccinated. Transporting young puppies long distance in crowded vans leaves them vulnerable to many dangerous dog viruses. Most do fine, but of course I was worried about my tiny gal, whom I hadn't even met. When we went to pick her up at the transport drop-off, Zoe was in a small crate on the top row with her sister, who looked exactly like her. The driver opened the crate and took both puppies out, and along with their information envelopes, handed one to me and one to the other woman, who was excited, just as I was. We both hugged our new chocolate chip puppies, took a few pictures, and rushed off to take our babies home. Warren and I couldn't get over how right our decision had been. Zoe was wearing a heart-melting little black and hot pink coat and settled right into my arms with what sounded like almost a purr. It was already late when I tried to get her to go to sleep in the crate. That was the plan, to get her used to sleeping in it from day one. She cried every time I put her in. I ended up sleeping downstairs with her in and out of the crate on my lap most of the time. When Warren came down in the morning, he saw a worried look on my face. "What's wrong?" "She's not well," I said. I announced that I was concerned about her weakness and her dazed state, then took her to the NVH, sent out some lab work, and started treating symptomatically. After 2 days with no improvement, I had her admitted to emergency vet hospital. We thought we were going to lose her, but after a week she began to improve, and thankfully, the very intensive care made a full recovery. When Zoe came home, we were back to square one as far as where we would have her sleep. After outgoing her puppyhood, Annie had graduated from the crate to sleeping in our bed, curled up next to Warren. But we had maintained a strict policy that all puppies slept in a crate. The logic for breaking the no puppies in bed rule was, as I explained to Warren, she is all of 3 pounds and part Chihuahua. She's like most tiny lap dogs. They get cold and crave their people. Warren asked theoretically whether it was possible that some people had their Chihuahuas sleep in crates and dog beds. He added point, giving it one more try. I put a space heater next to the crate, and that didn't end her little plaintive doggy cries to come bring her into the bed. Warren slept through that while I was up all night with her. The next night, Warren was out of town on a business trip, and I gave in. The first time I brought her to bed, she tucked in under the covers with me. There was no moving around, no accidents. I got a full night's sleep, and no intention of turning back to the crate debate. It was Zoe in bed, no matter what. In theory, Zoe was supposed to be Warren's dog. He'd encouraged me to find a dog like Daisy, who we'd fostered, and he named her Zoe, of course. In practice, however, though, Zoe loves her dad. She's a mama girl, and really the first real lap dog to stake out the claim in my life. Once she's committed to a lap, she gets very attached. She's also the most enthusiastic eater I've ever met. She loves her meals and loves her treats, especially the bedtime snack that all the dogs get to enjoy. She also knows who doles out the most treats and who serves most of the meals. She's extremely expressive, deeply sensitive, and very feisty. She did get the "you are so tiny in size, so have a small personality" memo, but I don't think she ever listened to it. Piglet may well have benefited from Zoe's rule bending, as hard as I tried to avoid doing it. Whatever I tried, I could feel my resistance slipping during those first 2 nights of sleeping on the couch and trying to figure out how to get baby P to sleep in a crate so I could get in my bed with Zoe. There was only one thing to do. On night 3, Piggy joined Zoe and Annie in the nighttime snuggle fest. He slept straight through the night, no fuss, no muss, other than a little bit of worrying about him falling off the bed, which did not happen. I was finally able to catch up on my sleep. Given that fact that I am a light sleeper anyway, I kept pretty good track of him throughout the night. Piglet learned very quickly that he was a bed dog. From the start, we developed something of a bedtime routine that became even more elaborate in days to come, so as not to wake Warren once I quickly settled the 5 other dogs into their respective spots for the night, with a last kiss on the top of Evie's head as she curls up under the fleece blanket covering our expensive bedroom chair from Pottery Barn. I secure Zoe and Piglet under each of my arms and then take a huge step-like leap into bed. Both of the tiny dogs immediately scoot under the blanket, curling up into the little tucked-in balls while I get comfortable, and then Zoe always goes to my left side to sleep as Piglet places himself right on top of me. It was amazing that our foster boy knew how to conform to a sleeping human as a 1.5-pound little thing. The evidence reinforced my understanding of how much love and bonding he needed at the start. This would lay the foundation for my insistence that anyone who adopted Piglet would have to agree in advance that he would be sleeping in bed with them. Initially, Warren was not delighted, as I was, with my solution to the problem of Piglet's sleep training, but he accepted it as measures of the last resort. He knew that I couldn't function being up all night, much longer, and that the best thing to do was what I did. Besides, as we kept reminding ourselves, this wasn't going to be forever. It's true that my original estimate of a few days of fostering soon proved to be very overly optimistic. Warren accepted the news socially and stoically when I told him, "It's probably going to be more like 2 weeks." His smile indicated that he had known this was coming. It's not that I questioned my ability to help Piglet Bart gain life skills he would need for adapting to a new home. It's just that it was going to take more time. His disabilities aside, Piggy was really young. From what was known about the hoarding situation at the time of his birth, he was supposedly 8 weeks old when he arrived in Connecticut. My hunch was that he was more like 6 weeks or younger. In fact, in that first week when I took Piglet with me to Norwalk Veterinary Hospital, a second time, one of the vet techs, Gina, made a comment to the effect, "He looks half-baked," she observed, half joking, half not. Maybe she was onto something. We knew he was a double dapple, and that told us his disability had been caused by genetics. But it was possible that due to his being a double dapple, some of his development was delayed. That being said, much of his puppy behavior was age-appropriate, plus his mapping and adapting skills indicated a high level of intelligence. It had amazed me that the second time Piglety and I visited the hospital, as soon as I took him from the car, he sat up at attention in my arms as I carried him up the path in the same direction we'd gone the first day. At home, I noticed just after a few days that he would avoid running into the gate in the kitchen. He had already mapped his way around the dining room where the table was. In those moments, I would never and again wonder whether or not he was making himself safe in the home. He definitely was. Our refrain of asking how much trouble could a little teeny deaf, blind, pink puppy be seemed to come from yesteryear. Warren's magic touch at getting Piglety to quiet down was not at all powerful all the time. Piglet might be completely buoyant, being in his favorite dad's arms for a while, but then he'd often end up having a screaming episode for one unknown reason or another. It was hard to read what was upsetting him or what he needed. When Warren wasn't at work and I needed to run an errand or attend a vet meeting without him, I'd leave Piglet at home. Sometimes he'd be fine. Other times I'd get an urgent text or call about how to handle something with Piglet that appeared to be crisis, though I was very keyed into his doggy schedule of needs and could often advise what to do. There were instances where the screaming continued endlessly until it reached a peak and I'd be texted or called to come home. Although we were subject to a mix of emotions that tore at Warren and me, our six-pack of dogs steadied us. They seemed to figure out right away that the pink puppy was different and needed extra care. They were sensitive to his carrying on and learned to play with the tiny, deaf-blind dog in the most inclusive way. Had we taken for granted how impressive they were? In fact, we had. Warren and I tried harder than ever to acknowledge how each tried to calm the screaming baby down. Susie was the best, almost like a canine nanny who knew how to engage Piglet when he was out of control. She would carefully approach him and then curl up at his side, which seemed to be most comforting. Susie initially volunteered for the job of surrogate mom, and after a while we were begging her to go babysit so we could have a break from the screaming and from having to hold him ourselves when we were trying to cook, write, and do other things that required more than one hand. My drives to and from work appointments were frankly torturous. Piglet could scream for an hour at a time in that car. I'd drive along while holding a chewy stick for him from the outside of the crate. Not a safe way to drive. The chaos the tiny boy brought into our household is hard to describe. Time has clouded our memory of the specifics of the deep anguish we all felt during the first weeks, Piglet included, but we were all remembering the experience as stressful and agitating. Maybe if I hadn't been so determined for my part to end very quickly, I might have recorded more of it. We all felt compassion for Piglet. It was very upsetting to witness his ongoing distress. Next week, we'll learn more about this ongoing distress in Piglet, the unexpected story of a deaf-blind pink puppy and his family by Melissa Shapiro. Our next reading comes from the Best Friends newsletter, Summer 2025. These boots were made for standing. Adonis' stylish boots do more than make him look good. They also help him stand. Adonis came to Best Friends from a shelter in Wyoming, and it was clear he needed help. Veterinarians weren't sure how, but he had been injured and didn't have full use of his back legs. But with expert care and a nifty pair of boots, he was about to do a lot more zooming around. Physical therapy was one of Adonis's biggest healing helpers. Through stretching, mobility exercises, and massage, he began to scoot across the room on his front two legs, chasing sunbeams and catnip toys. That was indeed wonderful progress, but caregivers noticed he kept trying to stand on his back legs but couldn't quite get the grip on the floor he needed to do. Enter his adorable rubber boots. It took Adonis some time to get used to the boots and not immediately try to kick them off, but eventually he did realize that they gave him more traction, and with his newfound confidence, he began playing even more. In fact, caregivers said his favorite game became a catch me if you can as I knock over the recycling box. Adonis still has some challenges. For example, he still can't use the litter box on his own, but with understanding and care and boots, the sweet boy's future is brighter than ever. The next story is entitled The Amazing Miracle Kitten. From comatose to playful and cuddly, Indy is one kitten who truly beat the odds. Tiny yet mighty, that's the perfect way to describe Indy. You're truly never going to meet a kitten more resilient, and veterinarians and caregivers will attest to that. When Indy first came to Best Friends Animal Sanctuary from a shelter in Yuma, Arizona, she seemed like a perfectly healthy kitten. She was eating well on her own, she was bright, and she was as playful as ever. But all that changed when caregivers came in the next morning to find her comatose. A fragile Indy was immediately rushed to Best Friends Clinic, where she was given supportive care to help her become more aware. While she did come back, as caregivers would describe, she was simply not the same kitten. She had no control over movements or her legs. She couldn't eat on her own, and she'd lost her vision. Indy indeed had a long road to recovery. Veterinarians couldn't say for sure what happened to Indy, other than that she had a severe neurological event. But the good news was, now that she was stable, there was hope she'd be healthy again with special care, physical therapy, and love. It was a long road of touch and go. We introduced new things to her slowly, says Jess Ewing, Best Friends Veterinary Program Specialist. She was at first syringe fed and watered, but slowly we started doing physical therapy with her, and she began eating on her own. She was so sweet and loving with all of her treatments. One tiny step at a time seemed to be doing Indy some good, though we weren't sure. But we used warm compresses, massage, and shake machines that were designed to help build stabilizing muscles. Indy began to regain control of her body, including the ability to see light and shadows. With as much progress as Indy made, she quickly became known as a little miracle. Soon, she was even hopping and rolling and around the lobby at the sanctuary's Quincy House, impressing everyone with her determination and making everyone laugh with her silly antics. It has been an honor to watch the baby grow. She never lost the spark in her eyes or her curiosity, and she's grown in our hearts with every leap and bound, says Jess. I don't think that this is the end of her healing process, though. She's going to continue surprising us as she flourishes. And this story, Long Journey to Love, with understanding, playtime, and one special volunteer, Nala's life turned around. Nala's days are filled with sunshine, but not long ago her days weren't so bright. She made her way to Best Friends in Benton, Arkansas, from a nearby shelter. The poor girl was so nervous that she didn't even want to be touched. That is, until she made it out of the plague yard. With the help of another dog to distract her, caregivers put a leash around her. Nayla's head and gently led her out of the yard. Then something incredible happened. She morphed into a completely different dog. She went from shy and intimidated to happy and excited. She zoomed around the yard and was so thrilled to be there that she even stopped to put her paws on a caregiver. It was a side of her no one had ever seen before. Sadly, Nala's time in play yard was short-lived. Veterinarians discovered she had heartworm, and treatment meant she'd have to limit her activity. Caregivers would have to find a new way to keep the nervous pet happy. Enter Haven LaCour, a volunteer at the center. Though Nayla was hesitant about most people, with Haven, her bond was instant. Within 15 minutes of meeting Haven, Nayla rolled over to show her belly. And within an hour, Haven was headed over heels, in love with Nayla. That weekend, she took Nayla home and made her a member of her family. Since Nayla has been adopted, she has completed her heartworm treatment and has settled into her home nicely. Haven says Nayla is playing us back in kind with her loyalty as she becomes one of the best dogs we've ever had. She just needed somebody to love her. All these stories about the animals and their recoveries come from Best Friends Summer Newsletter, the 2025 edition. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of Animal Companions for today. I do hope you've enjoyed the articles and the reading, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.